This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
713-572-4610. If you want to get in, our friend Tony is here. Let's drop Tony in here on Payne and Pendergast this morning. Tony, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you, guys. Seth, this is what I want to ask you, and not saying, Sean, that you're not knowledgeable, because I know you are. You're the best. But Seth usually has a very colorful analysis of things.
Yes.
And this is what I want to ask. Okay. So y'all were speaking on the fact that if they had a setup for $100,000, that Deshaun probably wouldn't be dealing with this right now, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So, if he had a settle for the $100,000, does that mean that the way that you see Tony Busby act, that he would have just let that lay down? No,
I don't.
He would have drummed up another case, and that was just to get that done. Just like he's doing that, I don't think it would have never ended. I think he's going. Tony Busby is a clown, and sorry, that's my opinion, not reflected on 16 Radio, mm-hmm. But.
I mean, he's not an employee of ours or anything. That's okay.
No. I'm just saying, he was going to keep this going.
Yeah.
That lie that he told, like Madea say, I don't know if y'all look at the Madea Tyler Perry films, when she say that he's a lawyer, you need to be a lawyer. Yeah, that's what he is, a lawyer. So he is lying, saying that.
Hey,
saying
you know what, though?
He
I wonder.
Keep that going.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, and I wondered, though, I wondered about the initial demand or request of $100,000, because it felt to me, and any lawyers feel free to correct me, it felt like if he were just trying to throw something out there, hoping or expecting it to get rejected, that maybe the demand would have been more than $100,000. And then the other part of it, too, is, and by the way, we should say that Rusty Harden has said that he disagrees or thinks that some of the things that Busby said in this article were inaccurate or false. So there's a disagreement there. I wondered about the publicity that was brought, because if Busby's firm offered $100,000 and Deshaun Watson's people had agreed to that, or if Deshaun Watson had agreed to that, I don't think you would have had the I don't think you would have had the public. I mean, all the other plaintiffs that we know of came forward after you had the initial press conference,
okay,
where
Seth,
Tony Busby gave
deal.
His number.
But wait a minute, Seth. Here's the deal. So the $100,000. So okay, you're going to pay this, and we're not going to go forward with this. But does that make the other claims not have happened?
Oh, no. That's where, but I don't know if they would have come forward, because there wouldn't have been the publicity for it. Now, maybe somebody else would have filed a lawsuit, or somebody else.
Do you think Busby was going to stop there? That would just, baby, let me tell you something. If somebody going to give me something, I can feel like I'm milking for some more, I'm going to milk it for some more.
Right. But do you think, Tony. How much do you think, like, let's say they settled for $100,000, probably would have been a little bit less. Let's say they settled for $70,000. Do you think $70,000 really moves the meter for Tony Busby? Like this guy gets settlements on the regular for $2 million plus. And, like, do you think that's where he would have pursued it? Or maybe he would have for the publicity. But I don't know if he would have – expected that it was going to end up being, like, 22 plaintiffs ultimately.
I think that – that was all calculated. And the fact that he said that he did not know about free agency, and the day before the NFL opened its fiscal year, you filed a claim. No, boo, you got me messed up. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Hey, y'all have a good morning. I'm glad y'all took my call.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate the phone call.
Tony, we need to have Tony be my she's a little bit of a reality check on some of my cockamamie theories.
Yeah, she specifically requested you on that conversation.
Well, because it was my theory, yeah. You know, about how, but also because that does become the question of, because I did think everything that Tony was saying, okay, Busby's claiming that, you know, that would have been the end of it. And then Busby does say in this article that it was after the initial press conference that they started getting the flood of all these other women coming forward. I mean, this does happen where the conversation that Busby describes between Harden and himself was, hey, you might want to settle this. This guy's got an issue or a problem, and that maybe it just kind of does get tidied up and finished that way.
Right.
It's hard for me. So from a financial perspective, I don't think Busby expected this to be a huge financial windfall. When a guy like Busby says it's not about the money, then I think the way I interpret that usually is like, it's not totally about the money. Like, yeah, sure, money is nice. But like, Busby has had settlements for hundreds of million dollars or judgments for hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, this guy's meter is not moved by five-figure settlements, I don't think.
Right.
The publicity now maybe the publicity is where I'm being a little naive.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is, like, no amount of publicity is enough for somebody that likes publicity. And he's getting a whole lot more publicity. You remember when Trump first decided to get into the USFL, there's this story about how Trump was talking to one of his associates or somebody on an airplane, I can't remember, where he basically was saying, like, look, I opened up this huge building in Manhattan. This is back in the 1980s. And I get a little blurb on page 6 of section B or something.
Yeah.
Where I say one thing about professional football, I'm on the front page of the sports section.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so when it comes to getting publicity, there's very little. You know, go to the Houston Chronicle and look at what the top stories are.
Yes.
At any given time. There's usually three sports stories or so that are among the top 10 most popular sports stories. So that I won't discount that for a guy that likes publicity. Yeah. Busby's getting a lot of publicity out of
this. No doubt about it. Text message. This might qualify as the most ignorant text of the morning.
Oh no.
Can you believe Deshaun wants to clear his name and didn't do anything wrong? I wouldn't settle with these gold diggers either. You guys loved Deshaun at first, but you're showing your true selves now. One-way radio. Okay. So if we don't call the women gold diggers on the air, that means that we're showing our true selves.
You have to call them gold diggers or otherwise right. You're one-way radio.
Sir, you don't seem biased at all in this.
You don't.
Are you kidding me?
You guys are sitting up there telling both sides of the story,
right.
Which is the epitome of one-way radio. Because what you need to be doing is, if you're gonna do it both ways, you're gonna have to say alleged whenever you talk about Deshaun Watson,
right.
But then call the accusers gold diggers.
Right.
Okay,
right.
That's the way you're being. You're two-sided about it.
The words "one-way radio" actually occurred less than 20 words after the sentence. I wouldn't settle with these gold diggers either. One-way radio. That was typed by a human being, presumably with a working brain. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 12 words after the sentence, I wouldn't settle with these gold diggers either. Oh
no, it
God.
Is on. No, but honestly, that's a pretty good indicator that usually, like, you're probably, because I'm trying to be as, like, on, like, I'm trying to be as even-handed as possible in terms of recognizing that this is an ongoing case.
Right.
And that there are allegations. Whenever I've talked about the potential for Deshaun Watson being guilty or innocent or anything, it's all hypothetical, it's all alleged, it's all that. That's where we are with that. And if you can't see or hear through that, then it's because you're one-sided on it. You're like, yeah, I'm not gonna call people gold diggers until there's evidence or proof that they're actually gold diggers.
That's
okay,
right. That's right. All right, 713-572-4610 if you want to get
in. I'm not going to call Deshaun a horny perv until there's, you know, conclusive proof or consensus that he's a horny perv.
There you go. There you go.
Well, so, actually, I guess, what could we say? He's definitely horny, right? Because his own defense is that, like, oh yeah. I mean, he's had lots of consensual stuff with these massage therapists. So.
At a bare minimum, he has admitted to one, a kind of broken way of doing business and scheduling his therapy, his massage therapy,
yeah.
And two, some kind of creepy things in some of these massages that he deems consensual.
Like
those are all things that he's admitted to.
Right, yeah. Right. You're sloppy about his business.
Sloppy's okay? A good word. That's
like
a good
that's
word.
Where we know so far he's way sloppier about his business. At the very least, he's way sloppier about his business than he than people thought he was before.
No question. Yeah. No question about that. All right. Hall of Fame quarterbacks becoming available to other NFL teams. That started to become a thing each and every offseason. Could one prominent Hall of Famer become available next offseason? One of his former teammates says absolutely. We'll let you hear it next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Thursday. Nice to be with you. Charles Woodson was on CBS Sports Radio. He was on Zach Gelb's show and got talking about Aaron Rodgers. And, of course, Charles Woodson won a Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. He's a soon-to-be Hall of Famer, as is Aaron Rodgers once he retires. And he was asked point blank, does he think that Aaron Rodgers, who's had a lot of drama swirling around him this offseason, does he end his career in a different uniform than a Green Bay Packer?
I think if he plays long enough, I think he ends his career somewhere else. And, you know, that's not an anomaly. I mean, you think about over the years, you know, the great players that have played, you know, most of their career in one place and then going on to play somewhere else. You know, Emmitt Smith, Jerry Rice, Joe Montana, Peyton Manning, you know, myself, I left twice, you know, so there's in this league, man, you're just playing as long as you can and just win as many games as you can. And at some point, though, you know, the team is going to start looking to the future.
Now, Seth, Charles Woodson raises a good point. It's a fair point if you're debating this that, you know, there's rare is the great player that doesn't end his career in a different uniform than the one where he built up his Hall of Fame resume. I mean, we're seeing it with Tom Brady. He won a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay. I guess the one thing I would point out, you know, when he points out Jerry Rice and Emmitt Smith, and there's plenty of other non-quarterbacks you can point out, Andre Johnson here, J.J. Watt is about to with Arizona, just if we're going to localize it a little bit. Is it quarterback has always been a little bit different, quarterbacks going and finishing their career elsewhere. And so the names people will bring up, you know, Tom Brady, he signs in Tampa Bay. You know, Peyton Manning in Denver. Well, Peyton got hurt, and then they had the first overall pick, so they moved on. I don't know how you categorize Brady if it's the same as Rodgers, but do we see quarterbacks move on where they're still at the height of their powers, where they got seemingly completely sideways with the organization? Like, it seems like Rodgers and Green Bay have some pretty deep-seated stuff. And I know there was drama with Brady and Belichick, but it doesn't feel like it's to the degree that Rodgers and Green Bay have had through the last few years, does it?
The difference with Rodgers would be what you said. It's at the height of his powers.
Yeah.
It's when he's like at his absolute, when he just had an incredible year. And the guy that they drafted, it's not like he's got Steve Young sitting behind him.
Yes.
The way Joe Montana did. They got a guy who's very much questionable in terms of just what is his ceiling, how good do they actually think he is, all of that. And, yeah, the Packers traded up to get him because that's just kind of what – you know, Brian Gutekunst, who the GM for the Packers, is a guy that's been in Green Bay pretty much his entire career. I think this entire century. So – going back through Ted Thompson, their strategy has always been to just always be drafting quarterbacks. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they're ready to move on just because they drafted a quarterback. But Aaron Rodgers had been kind of on a slow decline for several years. And I don't fault the Packers for thinking, all right, maybe we have to plan on what to do next. And then it turns out, oh, wow, yeah, Aaron Rodgers, maybe it was because he was motivated by the threat of somebody taking his job. Maybe he had a chip on his shoulder. Whatever it was, he was a different guy this year. Maybe it was it's because he's in the second year with his offensive coordinator and head coach, and that matters. In a Matt LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan, Gary Kubiak type of offense, it usually takes until that second season until things really click. That would be the difference. Because I'll go through – I mean, you go through various – Hall of Fame quarterbacks. I know, and you know, Troy Aikman, he didn't go anywhere else.
Right.
Steve Young didn't go anywhere else.
Yep.
Kurt Warner did. He's a different
different case.
No. But yeah, I guess you know, Jim Kelly didn't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah, so even Peyton Manning and Tom Brady are the I think the exceptions that prove the rule, because even though they've been more recent, they were one-offs. Like Drew Brees didn't go anywhere else. I'm guessing he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Well, he John came Elway. From the Chargers, so the,
oh,
the
that's
Saints,
right. Yeah, damn it. Okay, but I almost don't count that. So, like, yeah. if you look at where he did his actual where he earned his Hall of Fame.
He's
candidacy.
A Saint. Yes,
he earned his Hall of Fame candidacy with the Saints, and he didn't go on elsewhere after that.
Right.
John Elway did not. Brett Favre did.
Yeah. Brett Favre
did. Dan Fouts. Where did Dan
Fouts did not go anywhere else?
He didn't go anywhere
Charger
else,
for
yeah.
life. Yeah.
So I think there's, I mean, it's not exceedingly rare that a Hall of Fame quarterback goes elsewhere, but it's not the rule for sure.
I think it's maybe just symptomatic of kind of what we're seeing with Deshaun Watson. You know, the football side of what we're seeing where guys just, quarterbacks feel, you know, we're seeing it with Russell Wilson to some degree, Seth. Guys are just more vocal about how the team is handled these days.
Yeah.
And have more power. And they, if they're more vocal, have more power, and they're starting to realize, you know what, and they're watching Tom Brady go somewhere else at the end of his career. Because he got tired of playing for Bill Belichick. You know, why do I want to spend my twilight years playing somewhere where I either feel disrespected or they're not making the moves I want them to make when I can go somewhere and I'm someone who will raise the level still of that franchise and I can have the run of the building there like Brady does in Tampa Bay?
You know where maybe the best fit for Deshaun Watson, if we're going to talk about good quarterbacks leaving their teams, maybe the best fit would be the Las Vegas Raiders for because – at least one of the things he likes doing, at least that his lawyers admitted to already, is legal in Nevada.
Yeah.
So at the very least, if what his lawyer claims, which is that he was having these legal dalliances or these consensual dalliances, then out in Nevada, it's both consensual and legal. So there you go.
He would get some of his sponsorship money back. He'd get an endorsement in Nevada.
This is the problem with the Green Bay Packers.
Ooh.
Did Woodson talk about whether the Packers were going to trade him?
No, you want to hear that? Let's hear that Charles Woodson. Yeah, Charles Woodson with a follow-up question from Zach Elbows. You think they might trade him?
I think it could be one of those situations where it gets nasty at some point somehow in a back and forth between, you know, the Packers and Aaron's agents and then, you know, before you know it, somehow the thing gets blown up. So, I mean, I certainly hope that doesn't happen. But, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. You know what I mean? So, this could be a situation where, before you know it, you know, somebody makes a play or makes some kind of offer, you know, for Aaron Rodgers, and Green Bay can't refuse.
Those are some pretty strong comments for a fairly recent teammate of Aaron Rodgers right there.
Yeah.
On how it could play out.
Well, and this is the thing about Green Bay. And it's a little bit like New England, where sometimes when a team has an awesome quarterback, people in the front office and perhaps on the coaching staff at times almost get jealous of the quarterback. And there's a little bit of a, hey, what about me, that goes on. Hey, look at us, though. We've done good things, too. And they can't stand that the quarterback gets all this credit when, like, well, yeah, but we're the brain trust that put it together. And I remember Andrew Brandt, who used to be the GM or president. He was a GM for the he was a front office executive for the Packers.
Yeah, yep.
He was talking to Ross Tucker once, and he said, basically, you know, Favre and Rodgers get all this credit, but at times people in the front office are like, hey, you know, like we've done some stuff too. To which I reply, have you? I mean, you haven't drafted a pass-catching offensive skill position player in the first round since before you drafted Aaron Rodgers. So you drafted Aaron Rodgers in 2005. Since 2005, Sean, This is how many offensive players they've drafted, non-quarterback offensive players, since 2005 in the first round. Two. They've drafted two offensive tackles since 2005. And then you
No skill guys.
No skill guys in the first round until quarterback this year in 2020. Right. So between then, it's been all defensive players. Other than those two offensive tackles, it's been all defensive players between 2005 when you drafted Aaron Rodgers up until last year when you drafted Jordan Love. You've drafted defensive players in the first round.
Hmm.
And meanwhile, your defenses have largely sucked.
Yeah.
You know, you had some 2009, 2010, they had a couple really good defenses. But then since then, they've been above top 15 in defensive efficiency twice.
Since 2011. In a decade?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was, it's been really, really bad. They have not done a good job other than the fact that they've had Aaron Rodgers. And they've done well with receivers in the second and later rounds. But how much of that would have been, you know, is Jordy Nelson going to be Jordy Nelson without Aaron Rodgers? Are some of the other wide receivers going to be the same guy
without Aaron Rodgers? Yeah.
So yeah, there's a little bit of a disease of me in the Green Bay Packers, the New England Patriots. Like some of these guys, they're almost like Jerry Krause, like you pointed out earlier.
Yeah.
The Chicago Bulls back in the day, where you want credit. You want credit for the fact that, like, okay, yeah, I'll give you credit for drafting Aaron Rodgers back in the day. That was a ballsy move. Good job, Ted Thompson.
Very much a players don't win championships, organizations win championships. That was Krause's pretty much damning quote that he put out there right in the midst of the Bulls title runs was, oh, it's not players that win it, organizations win it. And it's like, dude, you got Michael Jordan. Chill the hell out.
Yeah, from 2011 through 2020, they were almost always, every single year, like 3 out of 4 years of, on average, about a worse-than-average defense, despite drafting defensive players with their first pick in the first round every single year.
Interesting. Tony Busby did an interview with the Washington Post. In it, he poked holes in one of the clear ways it would appear that Rusty Harden is going to try to defend Deshaun Watson. We'll let you hear Harden from last Friday with this particular line of defense and Busby poking holes in it, and a whole lot more from this really incredible Washington Post article is next. All right, so there is an article in the Washington Post today. It's an interview with Tony Busby, and in it, this is obviously Tony Busby's side of the Deshaun Watson saga, what he's seeing from his side. It paints Deshaun's inner circle in a fairly, inner circle not including Rusty Harden, in a fairly incompetent light, specifically Scott Gatfield, Deshaun's initial representation from a legal perspective. He's the general counsel for Athletes First, which is the agency that represents Deshaun Watson. And so there's a lot of anecdotes in there. One part that we've not really touched on yet, at least in the last couple segments is Tony Busby kind of poking holes in what is, I think, if Friday's press conference with Rusty Harden is any indication, is going to be a part of Deshaun Watson's defense if indeed these cases go to trial. It's the timing of all of the massages involved in these lawsuits taking place after the coronavirus became a thing here in the United States. Here, just to refresh, is Rusty Harden last Friday.
Folks, this guy has been getting 2 to 3 massages a week. The math I do on that is anywhere from 120 to 140 to 150 massages a year. In the year 2020, all of a sudden, spas shut down. Fact is, the world massage world during the pandemic changed. If you look at these allegations, my calculation is every one of them occur after we shut down for the pandemic. I'm just saying that if you are a busy, active athlete, and you are traveling constantly, as he was, then you are going to have immediate, when you want to get one, you can't predict it ahead of time.
All right, so that was Rusty Harden last Friday. Busby, in this article in the Washington Post, which, by the way, is written by a writer named Will Hobson, who's going to be on In the Loop today at 11:40 a.m. We should point that out. Tony Busby says, Seth, because of COVID, he was reaching out to dozens of different people on Instagram, for massages? Because of COVID, you would think he would have one person who had tested negative. In other words, you would consolidate the number of people giving you massages as opposed to cycling through a different one every day, seemingly.
Yeah. That's where, and that's where sometimes, I guess, the strategies of looking for massage therapists and the quantity of massage therapists, in and of itself, isn't an argument that you definitely were looking for massages for nefarious reasons, I guess. That's where some of Busby's arguments about it and this matter kind of fall short for me. It doesn't mean that the other ones do. Because I think the easy response to this, just like Harden has said, hey, you know what? He was having consensual encounters. We'll admit to that. I think you could likewise say, well, he just wasn't as concerned about COVID as he should have been.
Yes.
And maybe the NFL fines him for that. But he was, first and foremost, he wanted to get massages. Like, that part of it, there's a plausible scenario in which an athlete does want a lot of massages and just gets them because, like, whenever it's convenient, and he'll call a spa and what have you. Now, if it is for nefarious reasons, the sheer quantity of it and it paints a picture, it paints a certain picture if he is guilty of all of this stuff. But just looking for massage therapists at spas or on Instagram or elsewhere, that in and of itself to me isn't damning. It helps paint the picture if other stuff is true.
Yeah, Tony Busby is making an argument against something that Rusty Harden's not even arguing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
Busby.
Yeah.
Rusty Harden's argument in that clip that we just played about Deshaun and COVID impacting the litany of massage therapists that you've seen had nothing to do with the medical aspect of COVID. It was the inconvenience aspect of COVID. You know,
yeah.
And so when Busby says, well, wouldn't the safe thing to do, and I'm assuming he's bringing this up because of safety, wouldn't the safe thing to do be to go with one person who's tested negative? Yes, that would be the safe thing to do. Deshaun's not saying he was concerned about his safety with COVID. Clearly it's a convenience thing. There are a lot of things in here, Seth, that get pointed out. I mean, we point them out and other people point them out. And you could tell Rusty Harden is playing defense against a lot of these things. You know, Instagram, you know, the use of Instagram. A lot of people going, boy, look at him. He's DMing people on Instagram to schedule these massages. Yeah, he is. And that's not illegal. You know, oh, yeah. My God, he's got 50 different massage therapists. Yeah, he does. Also not illegal. Like, it's weird. It's strange. It's foreign to a lot of people over the age of 40 that he's using Instagram to do all these things. But he shouldn't have to really defend himself against those things. Those things are really just elements to this that create a perception that Rusty Harden's going to have to battle as opposed to an actual illegality that Rusty Harden has to battle.
Right, I guess, and that's where it does. Like, the quantity of it all, it's the quantity of it becomes alarming if you have shown or have proven that it was for all of the alleged things that he was doing.
Yes.
That's where it becomes. Otherwise, it becomes like, okay, gosh, he doesn't think ahead very well, and he schedules a lot of massages kind of on the fly. Like, I guess, to me, that's always seemed weird with the sheer quantity of it, but it doesn't seem that, you know, one of the articles that I just read on ESPN that kind of did a synopsis of everything, it said something like, well, it's just amazing that Deshaun would even have, like, the ability to get this many massages while conducting the life of a busy professional athlete. And that part of it, again, that doesn't make logical sense. Like, it takes an hour to get a massage. Like if you assume that it's for legitimate reasons, or even illegitimate reasons, or what have you, it takes an hour or so. There's 24 hours a day. Athletes aren't generally working out 12 hours a day.
It's not a round of golf. Where it's taking 7 hours to go play.
Yeah, right. So all of that, it's and somehow when I hesitate to even bring it up because then people assume that I'm defending Deshaun. I'm just saying there are certain sides of each side's argument. There are certain parts of each side's argument that just frankly do nothing for me.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, so on Harden's side, on Busby's argument, a couple of things he does, he keeps saying, wow, I can't believe Deshaun went outside of the Texans' vast resources. Like, okay, well, the Texans don't actually have vast resources when it comes to massage therapists. Most guys, they'll use some massage therapists that might be affiliated with the team, but most guys that get a lot of massages go elsewhere also because there just simply aren't that many resources with an NFL team. Harden, let's see. From Harden's side and Harden's camp, I think the biggest thing that I found questionable is just simply that when they did the press conference, we heard a whole lot of character testimony from attorneys who were hired by Deshaun Watson. Like, I don't need somebody who's being paid by Deshaun Watson to get up and tell me, hey, he's an awesome guy. I've known him for several weeks. He would never do this. Like, that, if anything, that angers me. Like, I don't need somebody who's known Deshaun for 2 or 3 weeks to tell me, no, he would never, ever, ever do something like this. Like, let's stick to the relative facts of the case.
Well, you spent several weeks around him, and Rusty Hart said that, Seth, the first several days that those attorneys spent with Deshaun Watson were solely for the purpose of finding out what kind of person Deshaun Watson was.
Yeah.
So it would stand to reason that Deshaun Watson is going to be portraying the best version of himself. And again, this isn't me saying that Deshaun Watson is liable nor guilty of all these things, but you're right. Like, if the character part of it, you know, the character witnesses, when they're people who've not known him for very long and who's the majority of the time they've known him, their purpose in getting to know him was getting to know his character, as opposed to spending a year around him, observing him do things in the, you know, in without public knowledge of them, where you go, man, this guy's a really good guy. And you know why? Because I've got 20 stories here that he would not want me to tell you about what a great guy he is.
Yeah.
You know, those they specifically stood up at that press conference last week. I mean, it was practically an infomercial for Deshaun Watson pre-March 16th, 2021. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It was so I guess now we get into an interesting period of time, right, where we're just going to wait around and see what happens. And now, okay, let's see, how long till the draft, Sean? Is it?
It's 2 weeks from today.
It's 2 weeks from today.
2 weeks from today, and the number of lawsuits is increasing, not decreasing. Well, I guess it's technically stayed the same this week because we had one fallout, but we added one last night.
Well, whenever we've talked about whether something gets done before the draft, and everybody's become increasingly, you know, pretty much, I don't want to say pessimistic. I'm not hoping for anything in this right now other than just, I hope everything gets resolved in the way that it should be resolved.
Justice.
But as far as the draft goes, I think we've been looking at it almost from everybody except Deshaun's perspective, where we've said, well, I wonder what other teams will feel about it. I wonder what the Texans are feeling about it. I wonder if there's any part of Deshaun that maybe thinks, if I just settle all of this right now, in my best chance on getting the hell out of town and not ever having to deal with this, at least locally again, is to just settle everything immediately. And then maybe some team, whether it's the Eagles or somebody else, comes through. Is that plausible if you put yourself in Deshaun's shoes?
Yeah, well, for him to feel that way, I don't know if it's plausible to get a deal done, but is it plausible that Deshaun feel that way? Seth, 100%. As you were laying that out there, I'm thinking to myself, okay, let me put myself in Deshaun's shoes. And my guess is, Seth, he just wants to hit the reset button on every level right now, right? He wants a new, we already knew he wanted a new employer, right? He wanted a new head coach. He wanted a new GM. He wanted a new owner. He wanted a new uniform. He wanted new teammates, all those things. That was already true prior to all this. Now my guess is, I mean, there's no way that he can have a Pavlovian feeling about Houston that is anything but gut-wrenching, anxiety-inducing, sleep-depriving, like all these things, Seth, like both geographically and professionally. Now more than ever, the guy probably wants to hit the reset button. And so, yeah, if someone close to him had told him, you know, like, that's Rusty Harden's department to go, hey, look, we think we can settle these things fairly quickly. It's now David Mulugeta's department to be in touch with these teams and be in touch with the Texans to at least keep possibilities on the burner for the next couple of weeks, right?
One of our listeners DM'd me yesterday and he said, hey, you know, like how much of this potentially, how much of Deshaun asking for the trade could have really been because he knew something was brewing on this side? And he had his dates a little bit messed up, but he said, but the way he presented it to me was compelling. And I'll explain how the dates are a little off in a second. But he said that the Watson trade request news broke on January 28th. The first email in the thread that Harden released was dated February 3rd. I am of the opinion that the settlement request played a big part in his trade demand, and he wanted to get out of town while he could. The important thing there is that, yeah, the news of the trade request broke on the 28th, but that news was that he had requested it weeks earlier.
That's right.
So when Schefter first... it was Schefter or Rappaport that broke that news.
I just remember seeing the actual request. I just remember seeing it on TV in our studio, yeah, which is always on ESPN.
And it was with the initial report was that the request had been made weeks earlier.
Right.
The first cryptic tweet about some things never changing, that came out immediately after Nick Caserio was hired, January 5th or 6th.
5th.
Yeah. So the actual lawsuit itself, I don't think had anything to do with the trade request. But you do wonder... Everything we know right now about the alleged blackmail attempt by plaintiff number three, that's what Harden's side is claiming, the lawsuit here in early February, how much was brewing, how much could Deshaun Paby have had a heads up on any of that? And, like, did that contribute to perhaps, like, the overall stress level? Like, maybe his whole world felt like it was collapsing in on him early in January, maybe late in December, if he had any inkling that there was trouble on the horizon, plus he had all of this turmoil and dysfunction within the Texans organization.
Yeah, I think he would have had to have known something. You know, someone would have had to tip him off that something was about to happen, because he clearly, if we believe the pattern of behavior, I think it's safe to say, I don't know that he thinks he's doing anything wrong with doing all of this. You know what I mean? Or at the very least that he wasn't going to stop it. Like, it's not something that he viewed as, I'm going to get in trouble for any of this stuff, because he kept doing it.
Yeah, and maybe at some point, I wonder if any of the women involved told him, hey, like, if the alleged occurrences were happening, did any women come to him, any therapist come to him and say, this is what I'm hearing, this is what, like, hey, you got to knock this off, because my friend that I referred to you is telling me this?
This is where it'd be great to know the dates on the Jazz Brooks texts. Jazz Brooks was one of the 18 massage therapists that Rusty Harden put into a statement supporting Deshaun Watson. Tony Busby, a week or so later, countered with what he said. It was a screen grab of a text conversation that Jazz Brooks, massage therapist, a very prominent and good massage therapist, was a massage therapist for Team USA Track and Field, a text exchange she had with a friend where she said in the text exchange, if I'm not mistaken, that she had told Deshaun Watson that there were things going around about
him. Well, but her explanation for that subsequently was that he was using too many total therapists, and it was...
His phone number was out there.
Yeah. So I don't know. That all comes down to, okay, whether you buy her explanation or not. It's going to be... I guess the depositions of those character witnesses could get interesting,
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm. If it comes to
that. Because I guess it's one thing to put out a statement. It's another when you're being under sworn testimony.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No question about that. No question about that. All right. 713-572-4610. If you want to get in, phones or text, they are both wide open today. Darren Revelle is going to join us at the bottom of the 9 o'clock hour, as he does each and every week. There was a pro day yesterday. As a Texan fan, did you feel a little left out? And are the narratives coming out of it exactly what Seth and I predicted? We will get to that next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.